And good morning to everyone. Our first case of the day is State v. Avery R. Tyler. Justice Frydenberg is recused from this matter. Mr. Wilson, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may approach.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel of the state, my name is Mike Wilson. I represent Avery Tyler in the matter here present before the court. The issue on appeal is the denial of a post-conviction motion, the first-degree murder case, and this is a case where the post-conviction was denied without any evidentiary hearing. So we're here asking the court primarily for remand for evidentiary hearing on the claims that were presented. The evidentiary hearing that we're requesting is needed for several reasons. There are some questions of fact that must be determined here before this can be properly disposed of. Number one, whether prosecutors, what they knew and when they knew it, when they told the jury that one of their key witnesses, Jelani Johnson, would not receive any deal, where the state, following trial, then dismissed his charge. There was a felony charge, I believe accessory. That charge was dismissed. As represented in the post-conviction motion filed by my client. Now, what we're saying is that if the prosecutor knew when she was making closing arguments to the jury that there was going to be a deal offered or that there was already an understanding, some sort of understanding off the record between her and either Mr. Johnson or defense counsel, that when she made these representations to the jury that no deal would be offered, that that constitutes prosecutorial misconduct as a knowing misrepresentation of fact.
Did the district court decide that that was procedurally barred?
The district court has called, I think, almost everything here procedurally barred, and what we'd argue is that first of all, you had the same counsel. You had trial counsel is the same as direct appeal counsel, so that's number one.
Would that go to the ineffective assistance of counsel, or would that go to the prosecutorial misconduct?
It could go to either. However, one thing I would point out with respect to prosecutorial misconduct, unlike ineffective assistance, the standard for this court is whether it could have been raised on direct appeal based on the record. So it's not, we don't have to allege that, even necessarily allege that direct appeal counsel was ineffective. I'd argue that because the record under Torres wasn't sufficient, period, to decide this issue, we can raise it on post-conviction without an ineffective claim.
Doesn't your allegation have to be more than a maybe on that?
At this point, the standard, my understanding of the standard, is that he has to make allegations of fact that would, if proven, would constitute a violation of his constitutional rights. That's the standard, to my understanding.
But he hasn't pled, has he, that there was, in fact, a pre-existing deal. He's just pled he suspects there was one.
That's fair. However, if he's saying, he's not only pleading that there was a deal, but he's also saying the prosecutor knew. He's saying the prosecutor knew, if you read his post-conviction motion, which was filed pro se, but I believe a fair reading of his post-conviction motion is an allegation that the prosecutor knew.
Where in the post-conviction motion would you point to for us to find that allegation?
That's a good question, Your Honor, and right now I do not have a direct citation to that page in particular. Never mind, I got you. It's supplemental transcript 30 to 32 is in my brief as citing as the position where I said his post-conviction motion alleges that the prosecutor during closing arguments, quote, deliberately lied to the jury when she told them that witness Jelani Johnson was a liar who would not receive a deal from the state in exchange for his testimony against Tyler, only to later dismiss all the charges against Johnson.
Isn't that an allegation, a legal conclusion, as opposed to an allegation of fact?
I don't believe so, because it goes directly to knowledge. And ultimately, that whole claim revolves around, what did the prosecutor know? When did she know it? If she knew that there was this understanding, maybe off the record, something like that, with defense counsel, that was maybe even communicated to Mr. Johnson, or maybe not even communicated to Mr. Johnson, but that's a question of fact.
Doesn't that circle back, though, to my original question? Isn't this alleged as a maybe and not the specific facts?
No, I believe Mr. Tyler, in his post-conviction motion, has alleged specifically that she knew. And that's where the due process
violation. I beg your pardon, she knew what?
She knew what she was doing. She knew
She knew there was a deal that, or as you might say in federal, a cooperating deal, or a something less than that.
Something along the lines of, I mean, I've been a defense counsel now, a criminal defense counsel for a long time, and I know that sometimes deals are made back room, off the record, and it's in the form of something like an understanding. And the understanding is that cooperate here. We'll see what we can do afterward, but we don't want to necessarily make
cooperate,
a formal...
Not in the technical sense,
right, because
of,
we don't want
a cooperating deal.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Not
you.
In the technical sense of a cooperating deal. It was somewhere on the spectrum.
Exactly, an understanding.
Okay.
I like to call it an understanding, because a lot of the times what prosecutors will do is they'll have an understanding with defense counsel, and that understanding is... with a witness's counsel, I should say. And that understanding is if your client cooperates, we'll see what we can do afterward. And I'd argue that should be disclosed under Brady if there's something like that in this case. My client alleged that there is something like that in this case. That's my answer to your Honor on that question. I think he has alleged it, and if it is there, if it can be... it needs to be fleshed out in evidentiary hearing.
What did the prosecutor actually say?
So in her closing argument, she said, we don't give deals to liars. That was part of it. She also was talking about, so the state pointed out in its brief, she was talking about how, at first she was talking about how the other key witness, Mr. King, received immunity. All right, and that's true. She was talking about that. But then the full context was that after that, she said, we didn't give a deal to Jelani Johnson. And she said, what I'd argue to you is that the police and prosecutors don't give deals to liars. We didn't give a deal to Jelani Johnson, you know, implying that he had been lying to police from the beginning. And he had a change of heart at trial, though, and was cooperating now and was telling the truth.
Well, he'd been charged with... was accessory to a felony or accessory to a murder, is that correct?
That is correct. So that and then she said
that was known to the jury.
Right. At the time of trial, that's all the jury knew. And then she says, in fact, the police arrested him and that charge is still pending. And that was a point that she was very clear in making to the jury.
Which was accurate at the time.
It was accurate at the time, but what we contend is that she knew that charge was either going to go away or be reduced or in some other way he was going to be rewarded for his testimony at trial against our client.
Counsel, the remarks you're talking about were made during the state's rebuttal. Is that correct?
I believe that is true.
So what was
yes.
the prosecutor rebutting?
Well, I'm obviously the trial counsel, he had attacked the credibility of both Mr. Johnson and Mr. King and said that they were out to help themselves. This was, I believe, an attempt to rehabilitate the credibility of these witnesses. Mr. King, by drawing a comparison to Mr. Johnson, by saying he got immunity because he's been telling the truth the whole time, we believe him, all right? And by the way, Mr. Johnson, yeah, he didn't get a deal because he lied originally. However, you know, we're going to bolster his credibility by pointing out that even though he's not getting any deal, he's here and he's testifying anyway. It can be spun both ways, and I think the prosecutor did a good job of spinning it both ways in this case. If the court doesn't mind, I might save this last minute for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kangeman, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. Tyler's post-conviction claims can be divided into two categories, prosecutorial misconduct and ineffective assistance of counsel. I will begin with the prosecutorial misconduct claim that Mr. Wilson spent the majority of his argument on. Tyler alleged in his motion that the prosecutor lied to the jury and then committed a Brady violation following trial. In conducting its de novo review, this court is limited to addressing the allegations contained in the post-conviction motion. Those allegations cannot be changed or bolstered on appeal, and Tyler's claim before the district court was based entirely on his assertion that the prosecutor committed misconduct by first stating during closing arguments that Jelani Johnson would not be getting a deal, meaning in the future, from the state, and thereafter entering into a deal with Johnson following trial. That, however, is not what was said during closing arguments. There was no discussion of what would happen to Johnson following trial. The state's remark was focused solely on the fact that Johnson did not receive immunity prior to his second interview with law enforcement and that the charge was pending at the time of trial. And that is a correct statement of the evidence that was presented to the jury. Johnson testified at trial that his charge was still pending and that he had not reached a plea agreement with the state in exchange for his testimony. He testified that he was merely hoping to receive either leniency or dismissal of his charges if he cooperated, and this does not violate Brady, as this court has previously said. Tyler made no allegations in his motion that Johnson's testimony in that regard was false, or that the state had an actual agreement with Johnson that they kept from the defense at the time of trial. Thus, Tyler has presented no allegations supporting a Brady violation, and the district court was correct in denying this claim without an evidentiary hearing.
What about the portion of the post-conviction motion that Mr. Wilson pointed to on pages 30 and 32, where he says that the prosecutor lied when she said he would not be getting a deal?
I believe that is the heart of Mr. Tyler's post-conviction claim, that the prosecutor lied by stating that at closing. But when you read what was said at closing, that is not what the prosecutor stated. So I think it's merely a misstatement of what happened at closing and Tyler's interpretation of that. So I think that's refuted by the record, that claim. I do not believe he made any allegations of an actual Brady violation.
Do you have any problems with the statement that prosecutors and police officers don't make deals with liars?
The state will acknowledge that when you isolate the statement by itself, yes, it appears to be vouching. But when you read the statement in context, I think you get a different understanding of what the prosecutor was attempting to do. She was responding to defense counsel's argument that he made during closing. He argued that the police gave this immunity deal to King because they wanted to pin the murder on someone. They didn't care if King was lying or not. I think defense counsel specifically said, I think it's a situation of you help me, I help you. The police do not care if he's telling the truth or not. I don't think he's telling the truth. That's what defense counsel said. So the prosecutor's statement was in response to what defense counsel was saying. She was attempting to explain, and I think if you keep reading that, she gets there. The statement itself, I would agree, when you isolate it, is vouching, but when you read further and see what she was actually getting to, she was explaining to the jury that there was little risk to give an immunity deal to King because the investigation had already led the police to Tyler, so they were not concerned of King's involvement. And furthermore, King, unlike Johnson, had not previously lied to the police. So it's not like they had to give him immunity for false reporting or some type of information like that. So I think when you look at the statement in context, there was no prejudice to Tyler. Beyond just what happened at closing, the overwhelming evidence against Tyler, I think it's important to note that all of the assignments of error on appeal and the claims raised in the post-conviction motion are focused solely on King and Johnson. But the state's main witness, who was someone that, unlike King, had no motive to lie, was Leroy Rivers. In fact, in setting forth the relevant facts in this case on the direct appeal opinion, this court referenced solely Rivers' testimony about the shooting and made no reference at all to King's testimony. Rivers immediately recognized Tyler and knew his first name was Avery. He testified that Tyler was the one who got into the physical altercation with the victim. Tyler was the one who broke away from the group and quickly retreated to his vehicle. It appeared that Tyler was getting something out of his vehicle, which made Rivers nervous. He had a feeling something was going to happen. And although he was at a certain point where he was standing that he couldn't visibly see the shooter, he heard Tyler's voice. He identified Tyler's voice because they had been in an altercation just seconds prior, and that he heard him say various things like, "What's up now?" as the gunshots were being fired. Rivers' testimony was supported by other evidence not related to King and Johnson. Surveillance video showed an SUV, which appeared to be a Jeep Commander, which was the same type of vehicle Tyler's girlfriend owned. The shell casings found at the scene were somewhat rare, and Tyler owned one of those guns that he had purchased just 2 months prior for a substantial amount of money. There was also evidence of consciousness of guilt, deleting text messages regarding Halo, and deleting his Facebook profile a day or two following the murder. So I think all of the ineffective claims can be dismissed because there is no reasonable probability that Tyler would have been acquitted, even if he could show any type of deficient performance on behalf of Tom Riley. Unless this court has any specific questions, I will leave the remaining prosecutorial misconduct claim on brief. We ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 8 seconds,
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just one moment, if I could respond to one thing. The state was talking about the strength of its case. As the state acknowledged, Mr. Rivers, Leroy, he couldn't see the shooter at the time of the shooting. I understand what she was saying about the voice, but this is a voice that he hadn't heard often. And there was another person there, Brittany Ashline, who actually testified she saw three people. If you read her testimony carefully, there's conflicts between the state's witnesses on that point. I'm not saying that, you know, there isn't circumstantial evidence here. Of course there is, but we've got serious problems with the state's witnesses when we have differing numbers of potential people there shooting. We have Mr. Johnson potentially receiving a deal that we were unable to cross-examine him on. We have problems with the failure to disclose that deal, if there was one. And we can't answer these questions without evidentiary hearing. That's really what we're here for. We're not asking the court to let Mr. Tyler walk free, obviously. We just want a chance to explore these things. For a life sentence, we think it's worth it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Were you appointed in this matter, Mr. Wilson?
I was not, but thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Anyway, for your service, the next case of the